You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Put your pencils down, because it's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Fenton.
Welcome, diligent scholars, to another session of the Star Seminar. This is a team-taught course, as you well know. I am joined, as always, by my comrade-in-arms, the great, internationally famous professor of footballology, Dr. Danny Fenton, and I am yours truly, Dr. Rabble Rouser. Danny, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing okay. You know, I'm actually, you know, I just finished up watching the show Air. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's the Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, the Michael Jordan shoe story, Nike story, and it was very interesting. I love documentaries like that, or a little, you know, those type of movies where you kind of get some behind the scenes of some things that happen and look at how all that originated. And I don't know, I started thinking to myself, just looking back through all the athletes and trying to figure out, like, who is truly the greatest? Like, you know, of course you have like Muhammad Ali and, you know, Tiger Woods will certainly look like he might've been on a path to be like the greatest of all time as well. Of course, Jordan is one that it's heavily debated, but a go-to of many. And I will say that's probably the hat that I would put my vote into there. But I wanted to ask you, Rabs, who do you think is the GOAT? If you all sports, everywhere you go, all errors, whatever you want to do, who do you consider the greatest of all time?
That's a great, great question, because I think it depends on the criteria. So I have the greatest of all time by a couple of different criteria. If we look at like who's the best like all around athlete who could probably play just about any sport and absolutely dominate, or at least be, you know, professional level, I think maybe the best athlete I've seen in my lifetime is Bo Jackson. I mean, Bo could do everything. And I mean, baseball players talk in hushed tones, football players talk in hushed tones. I mean, if he hadn't had that hip injury, he'd be maybe the best running back of all time. He's certainly the best Tecmo running back of all time. and so I think if you want to look at that, like, he sort of lines up with guys like Jesse Owens and Jim Thorpe and, you know, those kind of dudes who were like, and even Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson played football and boxed, did a bunch of stuff. Those sort of all around athletes were just really good at everything. The other way to think about it for me is, I mean, we can do the Michael Jordan thing. Michael Jordan's clearly the best athlete just from a pure, like, dazzling athletic perspective. You know, the things he could do with his body, and also basketball players, you can see their bodies more. I think that does lend themselves to this a little bit. But the things he could do with his body were just breathtaking, and it was breathtaking in a way that nobody had ever seen. And he was dominant, but he was dominant in his era. You know, he was better than everybody else in his era, but he wasn't dominant where he scored twice as much as anybody else. And, you know, I mean, some people are going to, you know, people are going to probably, you know, erase his various things in the record books eventually, because he wasn't that dominant. He was just great, you know.
He definitely was dominant in contrast.
In contrast with whom?
With his era.
No question. But he wasn't like... He didn't outscore everybody by like 2-1 like Wilt Chamberlain did.
Right.
Like
correct.
In some ways, you know, so this leads me to be thinking about, okay, like, so if we think about someone who absolutely dominated their era, right, then we're thinking about guys like Wilt Chamberlain, who was so much better than anybody else in his era.
Bill Russell, you know, throwing him.
Bill Russell, yeah. I mean, so But those guys also played in an era like Wilt Chamberlain was playing a bunch of against a bunch of like, 5 foot 10 white guys, who are really, really slow and wore very, 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 very high, tight shorts. And so the level of competition wasn't so difficult. I will submit to you that I think the guy who was the most dominant in an era when the other athletes were still actually pretty good and actually had access to good training is the guy known as the Great One, Wayne Gretzky. Absolutely shattered the record books and by such a wide margin that he still like dominates all the record books. And no one's come close in an era in which, scoring has fluctuated, all these other things have happened. I mean, I know NHL scoring probably isn't what it was then, but it wasn't like he just took advantage of an era. I mean, he just absolutely, nobody was close to him for years. And so if we think about a guy who was in an era where, the quality of play across the league was pretty strong in the 80s and into the 90s, the NHL was a good league and they were starting to get European players and starting to, they were a legitimate international league. And he absolutely crushed it. Nobody could touch him.
Yeah, no, I don't follow hockey enough to really have an opinion about that, but certainly, he's not called Great One without a reason, for sure.
He's more dominant in his sport than anybody else I can remember being in theirs, in their respective sports. I mean, it's team sport anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe Michael Phelps or somebody like that was more dominant in his sport. But I mean, in terms of a team sport, a guy who just outstood head and shoulders above the rest of the league. He was way, way better compared to the rest of the players in his league than Michael Jordan was.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about this too, it's like I don't know how much weight I should give to like longevity too, because you look at some players. There's a lot of players. Like, I mean, obviously, I mentioned Tiger Woods earlier. He was certainly, I think, a lot of people would agree that he was on his way to probably being one of the, the greatest of all time. Just the way that he was dominating, and same is true for Serena too. And like, I haven't followed. I don't follow, and I don't know enough to have any numbers or anything, but yeah, I can definitely tell the feel and what they did to the sport for sure. And of course Michael, he just, and I mean, they had Bird and Magic, and those were they were great players, but he just, he did stand out. And of course, basketball has changed to where you got several Michael Jordan like players now. They don't stand out anymore because there's so many of them where Jordan was really one of a kind back then. But no, it's interesting because there's a lot of, there's arguments to be made, and I'm glad you didn't say Tom Brady, or Joe Montana or anybody like that, or someone that we, a name we don't that has hurt us.
I've actually never heard of either of those guys.
Yeah, I don't. I Googled them. I had to Google them too. But what I do know about is what we have for today's show, Rabs. Can you fill our listeners in on what's going
I
down
would
in?
love to, because today what we've got for you is a special treat that we're calling the Inversed Podcast Switcheroo. So normally what happens is, before we get into the meat of our discussion, we'll offer, a little walk down memory lane. Both of us being, gray-haired fellas, we like to sometimes talk about the past and compare it to the present. And then we'll talk about what's been going on in OTAs and mini camps and the news of the week. Today, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to have a brief discussion of a couple of pieces of news really quickly, and then we're going to get into a long, leisurely stroll down memory lane to talk
Ooh.
about the Cowboys' last 20 years of playoff exits. But okay, before we get into that, I just want to throw one thing at you, which is that the news coming out of the OTAs and the mini camp, I guess 2 weeks of OTAs and a week of mini camp now, where we're just getting little tidbits, but one of the things that's come out and I wanted to kind of run by you was the state of the receiver room. So there's basically three things that we've heard over the last couple of 3 weeks. And I know going in, I know I was very skeptical about whether they'd done enough at receiver. But I'm sort of wondering where you stand now after hearing this. So we've heard A, and we've already talked about this, you and I, that Michael Gallup looks much more springy, much more explosive. We got some news that Brandon Cooks is even faster in person than he looked on tape, that his explosiveness downfield, and it was a big 60-yard like touchdown pass from Dak. to Cook's that was a highlight of camp, I guess, yesterday. And then also, I think the other thing that's really interesting and important is that last year's third round draft pick, Jalen Tolbert, looks much more comfortable. He's much more confident, and he's actually speaking about his experience last year with a great deal of sort of accountability and intelligence and wisdom. And so his approach seems really, really good. But he also just seems much more comfortable and confident. He doesn't seem like he's thinking out there, that he's actually just reacting. So given all three of those, is that enough to change your feeling in any way about the state of the receiver room, which I think, if I'm correct in this, I think I am, that we both had a decent amount of trepidation about.
Well, I don't. That's not entirely true, Rabs. I'm kind of in two parts. I feel really good about the main three. I think that the main three, all of them, provide us reasons to get excited. Not just a healthier Gallup and the addition of Brandon Cooks, who, by the way, no one should ever forget that he is a good receiver, because he is, and he hasn't shown us any reason for us to believe otherwise. And I think that he's going to be a fantastic addition to the Cowboys. But besides those two, we also have, the Cowboys' alpha receiver, CeeDee Lamb, who had a slight injury scare, but nothing to worry about it. I think he's fantastic. I go back and I watch his tape and look what he's done. I mean, I'm just more and more impressed with CeeDee Lamb too. So, I mean, I'm very excited about the main three. Now, as far as trepidation and with the Jalen Tolbert thing, I don't think a whole lot's changed for me. I'm glad to hear the good news, but for me, Rabs, I'm just really perplexed on what was going on mentally for him to not see the field, and has he been able to overcome those things? Because opportunity is going to be harder to come by this go around with the players, the depth the Cowboys now have. But just how improved will he be? I'm excited for it, to be fair, I was excited for it last year. So I guess part of my answer, I'm super excited about the Cowboys receiving group, but I also have a lot of pause with anything beyond those top three.
Well, I think the fact that you're even mentioning the top three is important because, when we first went into the season, I think a lot of people were saying, "Is Gallup done?" Like, he was clearly struggling last year, and then when remind me of who it was. Was it? I don't think it was Brian Baldinger. I think it was somebody else who did a really in-depth analysis of all of Dak's interceptions, and it looked like again and again that so many of those were attributed to the fact that Gallup wasn't explosive. Gallup wasn't completing runs. Gallup wasn't playing with a lot of confidence because the knee wasn't really responding. And it just seemed like, defensive backs, were beating Gallup to the reception point, as he wasn't explosive and he wasn't completing his routes even.
Right. Gallup
And
separation
so,
was not good last year.
no, it wasn't. And so, and, but like, the fact that he's springy, now suddenly everybody's thinking he's going to be the old Gallup, and that may be, but to me, that's the real key. I mean, it feels like, if Jalen Tolbert gives him something, then that's just gravy. But if they can get Cooks to be Cooks, which seems like he will be, and they can get 21 Gallup, then I think they're going to be
Yeah.
just fine.
And I think that's what you're asking for is not like just a bunch of things to all work out correct. I think what you're asking for was reasonable expectations. This is, I mean, we know that injuries take a toll to where you are not the same player. And if it's really on us, and I at least speak for myself, to even start to think that he should be. And so we set the expectations wrong, basically, in doing so. But now, when you get healthy, things are quite different. And so there's absolutely no reason to think a Gallup's not going to be that same type of player. And now in the wide receiver three role, because I think even his 2019 year, there was pre-CD, if I'm not mistaken. So he was our wide receiver two when he had his big year. But you throw Brandon Cooks in there, which I think he's going to be, as long as Cooks stays healthy, and we know that he is the older of the group, as long as he stays healthy, I think he's going to be one of the biggest surprise of this team, because he's going to be a tough cover, because he's had to play as the number one over the last couple of years in Houston, and that's not going to be the case over here. You have when you have Lamb, so somebody's going to be having some free looks in the open field, and I think that's going to be Brandon Cook. So I'm really excited about the Cowboys receivers.
Good. I'm glad because I think a lot of people were wondering why they extended Gallup. I think a lot of people were thinking they hadn't done enough in the offseason, especially since they didn't draft anybody high, after looking at so many top-rated receivers in the pre-draft process. So I think a lot of people were skeptical about whether the Cowboys had done enough. And now it seems like the things that people are saying, well, the stupid Cowboys front office is relying on Gallup to bounce back and Tolbert to have a good second year. Yeah, and that looks like that's what's going to happen. So I guess for me, happy to see that those things that clearly like the success of that room were dependent upon coming to fruition, and that and the Cowboys had a plan, and they saw the players and saw what the players could do, and it looks like that's what's playing out right now.
No,
Speaking
totally.
of playing out right now, I think we have ourselves a fun little game to play. So I tell you what, why don't we jump into it? I'm going to roll up my sleeves and listen carefully to what you have prepared for me, my friend.
So what I wanted to do today is I wanted to kind of take a little bit of a break from the usual camp news that we're hearing. OTAs are happening, finishing up actually. But I wanted to do, before we kind of move forward and really get heavy into the camp news, which we're going to go over again and again in the oncoming weeks ahead of us. I wanted to do one like final reflection where we kind of just take a look back, and I want to just pick your brain on and ask your opinion about a couple things. So, if you don't mind, first off, I want to challenge you a little bit. And I want to see just how good your memory is when it comes to our beloved Cowboys. So the first thing I want to ask you is, can you remember the? So first off, let me frame it this way. I want to mention that we've talked a lot about how we think this is a good Cowboys football team. If you actually look at the last 20 years, the Cowboys are inside the top 10 in winning percentage. They actually have one win more than the Eagles and one less than the Chiefs. And that just kind of tells you a little bit about how good this team has been over the last 2 decades. However, we all know that when it comes to the second season, the postseason, the Cowboys are not as good. And in fact, they are bottom five in winning percentage. And it's sad to say, we're all aware of this. Postseason failures over the last couple decades, but I wanted to go through these last 20 years. And my first question for you is, can you name all 9 losses? Can you, when we go back through their last 20 years, do you remember them all? Can you go through and
Probably, yeah. Are we starting in 03?
you know what? What order would you like to start at? What's easiest for you to?
We'll start in 03 and work our way up.
Okay.
But we're counting 03, yeah?
03, yeah, we are counting it because, yeah,
Okay,
that.
great. So 03, they lost to Carolina in round one after beating them in the regular season. Then in 07, they had a playoff bye, and they lost to the Giants, crushing defeat at home.
That you missed one. You think
Oh,
what?
sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right. 06, wild card game, they lost at Seattle in the
Right.
muffed extra point or field goal attempt, rather, which sort of cemented Tony Rogo's legacy as a quote unquote choker.
It started it anyways.
Then they had the loss to the Giants in 2007 at home, and the Patrick Creighton, the two passes to Creighton, one of which was dropped and one of which was a kind of a Hail Mary anyway. And then, of course, the loss in 09. The first round in 09, they got their first playoff victory in a long time by whomping the Eagles at home. It was glorious. Then they went to Minnesota and lost to the Brett Favre-led Vikings and their defensive line, which was very good. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, later. Then they didn't make the playoffs again until 14. They beat Detroit at home in the wild card round and then went to Green Bay and outplayed the Packers for much of the game, but ultimately lost in the end. The Packers pulled away in the fourth quarter. And there was a Dez catch, but there were a lot of other plays besides that Dez catch that were really
Absolutely.
meaningful in that game. In 16, just like in 07, they had a bye, and then they had the misfortune to draw Aaron Rodgers at home. Came out not really ready to play. Played catch up most of the game, and then caught up and had a not even had a chance to win it. But then Aaron Rodgers made a couple of miraculous plays, one of which was not fumbling the ball in a sack, and the other, which was an incredible sideline laser dart to a guy after a long developing play where he scrambled on bought time. Then we move forward to 2018. Again, I think the weakest, well, other than 03, the weakest of the Cowboys playoff teams in this stretch. But Dak managed to engineer a win at home over Seattle that was pretty convincing. I mean, he sort of just, built up a lead, and then had a big lead in the double digit lead in the fourth quarter, and Seahawks scored at the end. But ultimately, Cowboys were clearly the better team then. A very methodical win, a clutch win by Dak, really
Yes.
maybe the highlight of his career. It's just such a great game by him, and so
Yeah.
much leadership. Just took the team on his shoulders. Then, unfortunately, the following week, they went and we got r literally run out of the building against the Rams in the Coliseum, because the Rams were still playing in the Coliseum at the time. Then, in 2021, they had a home game in the first round against the 49ers and got off to a terrible, terrible start again. And were out physicaled on both sides of the line, really, by San Francisco. And then last year, nice playoff win at Tampa Bay.
Yes.
Sent Tom Brady packing. Loved every minute of it. Just made him look old and overwhelmed. He never really had a chance. It was just one of the most dominant playoff wins in my memory as a Cowboy fan. The only other one in this period that compares is the one against the Eagles in 09. And then the following week went to San Francisco and I think actually put up a much better fight than they did the previous year. It's a closer game. Their defense was better against San Francisco, but the combination of a lack of team speed and the fact that the offense was kind of moribund going into the game, and then ultimately losing Tony Pollard, that was it. That was the end of it. And teams without options have to take chances, and Dak took some chances and threw a pick here and there, and it was over.
Yeah, that is a great breakdown, Rabs, of just flying through the last 20 years. And I mean, a lot of those memories still resonate pretty good with us. And I remember Dak flying through the air in the Seattle game and thinking like, this is our guy. This is, finally we get to see like this is the guy we've been waiting for, to win in the postseason. And and then just going back through all the. All those missed opportunities too, just like so close, where the Cowboys, you felt like they had the game, and then something would happen. And you went through these games, and other than the Minnesota game, I mean, you're looking at so many close games that the Cowboys have had. And we talked quite a bit about luck being a big part of it. You have a break here, a ball bounced this way, or this penalty there, or just like so many different things that could change the course of the game. Of course, that Green Bay 2014, there's like a handful of different ones you could point to in that one. But what I wanted to ask you again, so very good job, by the way, with running that down. But of all those teams, and the Cowboys, sometimes they got closer than others. But of all the teams, all the years that you listed there, excuse me, how If you could give me the top three teams, like where you thought, okay, this team has a real legit shot at winning the Super Bowl, which of those teams would you choose?
I'm going to go 2021, 2007, and 2014.
Okay, I like your decision making there too. I mean, because I think I probably align really close with that. I'm a little bit torn on 2016 because there's a lot of reasons to like that team too. So if you would have thrown them into the mix, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. So you made your choices: 2021, 2007, 2014. So we're gonna actually go in starting from earliest on. So we'll start back at 2007. As you
Okay.
mentioned, it was the game, you know, where Romo throws the pick in the end zone to end the game. So I want you, so you've identified three of the best teams. So the next thing we want to do for this little exercise is I want you to, or us to kind of work through this and tell us the most glaring reason that they lost that game. I don't care about the season. I don't care about what was their biggest weaknesses overall. I want you to identify a scapegoat. I want you to tell me if you had to put your finger on one thing that the Cowboys did not do right in that game, who would it be? So starting with 2007, that game.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, comma, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Yeah, it was, I for me it was pretty clear. I feel like the Cowboys defense played well enough to win. I felt like the Cowboys had some plays there. But ultimately the thing that happened was that the Giants, who were nowhere near as good as the Cowboys, were able to provide an equalizer to the huge disparity between Tony Romo and Eli Manning by their defensive line whipping the Cowboys offensive line. So what happened, and that's the reason I actually didn't choose both 2007 and 2009, because I think the very similar thing happened both years, which was at the end of the year when they lost because the offensive line got whipped by a really good defensive line. And so, the whole equation kind of went kablooey. So I think what happened in 2007 was that the Giants rode their defensive line to a Super Bowl win, and that all started, you know, a week or two before they're against, you know, against New England and their playoff game. I don't remember they played, I think Tampa Bay before they played the Cowboys. But their defensive line really started to kind of find their mojo, and just kept playing better and better. And the Cowboys were really having trouble generating explosive plays. Like all year long, they had a strong running game. But where they really beat teams were by generating explosive plays in the passing game, primarily to T.O. But T.O. would scare the heck out of everybody, and that meant that Patrick Creighton and Jason Witten, a young Jason Witten, were able to eat and do some damage on their sides of the field and, you know, down the middle and stuff as well. And none of that was working. And it wasn't because the Giants had a good defensive backfield. I think it was because Tony Romo just didn't have time for anything that was other than a quick hitter to develop. And As the game went on, the Cowboys had trouble running the ball. They couldn't pass the ball. And the Giants had, you know, a time of possession advantage and just wore the Cowboys down. And there was that one drive at the end of the second half. It was a long Giants drive that I think gave them like a 14-7 lead. Am I right? That was really like a backbreaker. And the Cowboys normally would have been able to overcome that. That 2007 Cowboy team could have overcome that any other week in the regular season because they were so explosive. A lot of times they went in at halftime. They didn't have a big lead, but they were so explosive. And they just never found that explosiveness. And, and they just got – they got beat down by the Giants defensive line and never the whole complimentary football equation collapsed when that happened.
Okay. So just so I'm clear, your scapegoat for the 2007 loss to the Giants is going to be the Cowboys offensive line.
100%.
Okay. So make a note of that. Great choice, by the way. Okay. So moving forward 7 years, strangely enough, all of these are 7 years. So, we're going to go forward 7 years to 2014. Cowboys lost to the Packers, as you mentioned before. And, you know, it. So a lot of stuff going on in this one, Rabs.
I think it's a tough one.
I will say this is probably one of the few games where I'm, like, watching and I'm thinking, we got it. You know, I think we're the better. There was points in that game, mind you, earlier than the fourth quarter. But there were points where I'm like, we got it. We're going to do it. I could feel it. I could sense it. And it had that feel to it. But, you know, alas, it did not play out that way. So who is the scapegoat for this loss? Why don't you just take me through this one and give me some reasoning here.
When I first put this one out there, I said there were a lot of reasons. It wasn't just the Dez non-call, and you agreed. And I think that long before we got to that call, obviously there were some plays in the first half. There was a long DeMarco, the run that could have been a long DeMarco Murray run, maybe
right,
a touchdown.
Absolutely.
It was a long run inside the red zone. And then soon thereafter, that was followed by, or maybe it was preceded by a fumbled kickoff that James Hanna almost had and didn't quite get. So there were some, oh man, that was closest type of moments. But I think the game really changed when the Packers' offensive brain trust began to put rookie Davante Adams on the Cowboys' third cornerback, Sterling Moore. Hmm. Sterling Moore could not cover him. So basically, Davante Adams didn't do much all game. He wasn't having a whole lot of success against, I guess, it would have been Brandon Carr and Morris Claiborne, right, in 2014.
Oh.
And Scandrick maybe one of those other guys wasn't playing. I think 14 was the year that Scandrick was out all year.
Was it? It could have been.
I think he hurt himself like one of the very last plays of training camp at 14. I believe that's the case. Is that right? Well, maybe that was Sean. Whatever it was, I know that Sterling Moore was their third corner and oftentimes played the slot. And Sterling Moore, given his size and his physical limitations, had a magnificent year, made a lot of plays, was a tough guy, brought some attitude and presence to the team. I take that back. I know Scandrick was playing.
Yes, he was.
He was instrumental in that team. Yeah, he was a leader in that year. He really helped lead that low talent but high – a character defense. And at any rate, and so in the first half, the first, you know, three, halfway through the third quarter, even Davante Adams hadn't done much. And then I think they found something. They put him on Sterling Moore and Sterling Moore couldn't cover him. And Davante Adams made big play after big play after big play and helped the Packers get back in. And the Cowboys had no answer for it because their other receivers, I don't even know who the Packers receivers were that game other than Davante Adams. I remember him very distinctly, but, you know,
they had Randall Cobb.
Yeah, they had Randall Cobb.
Yeah, I think Jordy Nelson.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that I remember Randall Cobb making a really great catch at the end to kind of seal.
I remember that. Yeah, because
the Packers got the ball back, and he had like a few catches where he lined up in the backfield, and they did some stuff like that with him. But I think he might have even been their third or fourth year option. They might have had somebody else as well. At any rate, they had this rookie who had, you know, all the talent in the world and hadn't really found himself yet, and he just destroyed Sterling Moore and made big play after big play, and it helped the Packers get back in the game and get the lead because they just couldn't stop it. And so, you remember, there was a gimpy Aaron Rodgers. He wasn't playing up to his best, and the Cowboys had done a pretty good job of shutting him down. And then suddenly, you know, like midway through the third quarter to the fourth quarter, Packers had a couple big drives, and they both resulted in touchdowns, or maybe at least both scores. And Devontae Adams was instrumental in both of those. And Sterling Moore couldn't cover him. They found the bunny, and they just kept going. Hmm. They kept going to the guy who was beating the bunny.
Yep. So okay. So I was torn on what to choose for this one, because you're absolutely right. You know, Rodgers orchestrated those drives, and they were both touchdown drives, you know, but the Cowboys had like a 2-score lead too. And,
they did.
And then, you know, to Green Bay jumped ahead but I wasn't sure if it was the Cowboys just not getting enough pass rush on Rodgers, or was it other things? But you're absolutely right. Sterling Moore did log a lot of snaps in that game. He was their third corner and definitely, Rodgers was picking on him. So you are going to choose cornerback, basically, cornerback depth then for the scapegoat, in particular, Mr. Sterling Moore. They went after the bunny. Okay, so that's, there we go. Two down, and brings us to 2021. Move ahead 7 more years, and now we're talking about Cowboys lost to the 49ers. What do you got on that one, Rabs?
I think it's kind of a 50-50 split. I think they basically, it was line play. I think that both the Cowboys offensive and defensive line got manhandled. I think the Cowboys, they just got out physical and they got out coached, but they got out physical on both lines. It's really easy to outcoach your opponent when both your lines are dominating. So I'm going to split that one right down the middle. I think it's offensive and defensive line. They both got whipped. They both had that look of fear in their eyes by like halfway through the first quarter. And, you know, they rallied to make it respectable. But, you know, at some point, maybe in the third quarter or so, there was like they had a pretty substantial lead. And it was pretty clearly a butt kicking it. Was happening, which is too bad, because that 2021 team is, by all the metrics that I use, which are only, you know, a couple, but I think they're valuable and you know, reasonably good metrics, was the strongest team of any of these playoff teams.
I definitely agree. It was definitely in the trenches. I mean, the Cowboys were just, whether it was just trying to stop the run or, you know, try to just keep Prescott upright himself, they were having all kinds of problems. This is one of those games where, you know, they were after that Debo touchdown, you're thinking, well, that's the end of that. That's the end of that. But the Cowboys did put up a fight, though. They still had time, and they still were moving the ball. I felt like they had chances, and I even toward the end, you know, I feel like they had chances, and not just the last drive where they ran out of time with trying to down it, but it, like the drive before that, it's like, I feel like, you know, there's time, they can do this, but it just didn't happen. And I will say too, and while I don't disagree with your scapegoats that you chose, I don't think Prescott played all that well in that game too. I think that there's some shared responsibility with Dak. And of course, you know, there's a lot of other things with, like you mentioned, play calling and protection that didn't help his cause by any means. But I also just think that, you know, when you're hoping for a hero, you know, you just want a better performance than from your main guy too. So I wouldn't have any problem if somebody said Prescott there, but I'm gonna put you down for offensive line, but I'm also gonna put a slash defensive line too. So I think that's important, and most people would agree over the years, if you like, what's the Cowboys' problem? A lot of people are gonna point to the defense, and you know, they're gonna say defense, because for many years the Cowboys, they just weren't very good on defense, and that always held them back. You know, it's like even like the Green Bay game we just talked about, it's like the Cowboys had the opportunity, they had the lead, but then the defense just couldn't hold, you know, when it counted. But offensive line makes it the list a couple times. So now with the information that we have, we picked the top three teams, and we picked the three scapegoats for those games. And now I want the final thing that I want to do is I want us to look at this 2023 team, mm-hmm. 20 years later, and I want us to try to – I want you to explain to me why this Cowboys team right now is will not be in a similar situation come playoff time, because they have some of these things rectified. So give me your best – I want some positive spin happening here, Rabs.
Well, my first reaction would be they can't. I mean, we can't say that because their offensive line is a huge question, right? And I think that for us to say the offensive line is going to be fixed and they're going to be a dominant unit that's going to be playing well in the playoffs, that just seems impossible. So if you want to hear how they're going to do differently, I'll say a couple of things. By far the best defenses the Cowboys have fielded of all these playoff teams in the last 20 years have been the last 2 years under Dan Quinn. There in 2021, the defense in terms of defensive EPA was slightly better than in 2022, but they are both more than two times better than they were in 07 or 09, and they were, you know, they were decent. So that there's certainly some promise there. I think the defensive line has been getting tougher. I think that we can expect to maybe see a little bit more toughness on the defensive line, a little more stoutness, a little bit more ability to play the run. But, you know, it feels like almost every year the Cowboys offense tails off. We talked about this at the very beginning. Now, the Cowboys offense tails off, and it tails off in no small part because the offensive line either gets injured or old and tired or some combination thereof, or people just figure it out. And so it's the same group of guys. They're not younger than they were. So, you know, Terrence Steele's coming back from an injury. I have no idea what that's going to mean for him. It probably means that he won't be himself until the following year. And, you know, for us to have market improvement, what we're really relying on is this. We're relying on Tyron Smith to stay healthy and be 75 to 85% of himself, right, of his best self. But, you know, we're assuming that Terrence Steele, who had three, who damaged three different ligaments in his knee, is going to come back and be his old self. And history suggests that that's not the case. He won't be his old self. So honestly, it's one of those things where if they're gonna avoid the schneid, they're gonna do it a couple of ways. One, the offensive line, thanks to Mike Solari or some other combination of factors, is way better than we expect, that we have a reason to believe. And two, and I think this is a really important thing that we haven't talked about in terms of these matchups, and two is that they just get a luckier run. They get better matchups. You know, so one of the things that's happened, like if you look at several of these games, you know, they played Aaron Rodgers in 14 and 16, played him tough and close both times, but gave him an opportunity to pull it out at the end. They went up against teams in 2007, 2009 who had really, really good and deep defensive lines. They could damage you four across, right? And so the Cowboys, old, aging, and not particularly foot quick offensive line really struggled because both those defensive lines had some speed athletes. You know, and in 2021 and 22, we know what happened. They had bad matchups in addition to not playing well. So, I don't know. I feel like you were talking earlier about how many of these are close games. Only one of them wasn't close. And frankly, that Minnesota game, it was close for a while. And Brett Favre made perfect throws on long passes that got the Vikings down close. Cowboys were hanging in there. That team was pretty good. That defense was really, really playing well at that moment. But I mean, literally like perfect throws where he threw it into like a canning jar size hole and hit a dude who was covered, blanketed. So, you know, I mean, you just got to tip your cap to the dude and say, I mean, nobody, Deion Sanders, Darrell Revis, nobody could have defended those passes. They were perfect passes. So that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
you know, if you're gonna go up against a team that has an offensive line that's getting whipped, you know, you need your defense to get some breaks, and they didn't. They in fact, the opposite happened. There were a couple of perfect passes that put the game out of reach, and then the Cowboys had to start taking chances, and you know, it snowballed and it got really bad. At any rate, I think that you know they've had some bad matchups. Obviously, the better team you are, the less likely you are to have bad matchups. But they haven't, you know, in the second round in particular, found teams they match up well with.
Yeah.
So the other thing I will say is that in most of the years that we're looking at, they were not good on both offense and defense. They were good on one or the other. Mm-hmm. So if we look at like 07 and 09, they were good on offense, pretty good on defense, but they weren't great on defense. In 14 and 16, they were really good on offense, much better than either of those other years, but not as good on defense. And then last year, not so good on offense, very good on defense, about as good as they were. The 2021, that's the thing that's really a killer. That was the one year they were really balanced and really good on both offense and defense from a kind of EPA perspective, from a from a margin of victory perspective, et cetera. They were very explosive and could, man, they had a lot of, they could make a lot of plays on defense. They were a really exciting team. They lost their mojo and got whipped at the end. So part of that's just luck. I mean, that team was capable of making a Super Bowl run. They could have beat anybody. If someone had knocked off San Francisco, they might have had a different run.
Yeah,
that didn't happen.
With
as many teams making the playoffs, the chances of I don't know. I guess I'm trying to actually think mathematically. Maybe it increases your chances of getting a better run. Because there's certainly in the first round there's more patsies, but maybe it increases your chances because of teams that you don't want to face can have to play you before you face them so that they can get eliminated. But one of these years they're gonna get a bunch of good matchups. You know where a team they really don't match up well against will lose to somebody in the previous round, and they'll get a great matchup and it'll help them advance.
Right,
but that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, and I as much as we've went back and forth with this, to understand that. That luck does play a big part of it, and you know, you if you're going to make a Super Bowl run, you know, you need to be on the right side of that too. But one thing that I want to finish things off with here is, and I'm not going to classify them as scapegoats by any means, because you know they're not scapegoats. But you know, I did hear you talk a lot about tipping your cap to whether it's Favre or Rodgers, or you know, I think that. What needs to happen for the Cowboys is we need to have some other team tip their cap to our quarterback. And I think that it's time for our quarterback to not just play okay and not be the scapegoat, but to actually be that player. And for me, I think that that's something that's been missing. If you look at all those games, you could always point to just plays that the quarterback, you remember like the Green Bay game when they kicked the game winner, you know, with the whole Jared Cook thing that we saw. I mean, the Cowboys could have avoided that by not even kicking that Dan Bailey field goal, but instead driving down and with the game winning touchdown. There's opportunities that they had in almost all of these games where the quarterback play was just not good enough, you know, whether it's throwing an interception in your own, you know, deep in your own field, or just others. I mean, Romo took a sack in 2004. Nobody talks about that play, you know, right before the Dez, couple plays before the Dez, where he could have just easily threw it away, but he took a sack and made a third and longer that, you know, then Cole Beasley had a catch that was just short to create the fourth down. But I mean, just things like that. I feel like the Cowboys need to have a quarterback that catches fire and plays like a championship quarterback. And I feel like that's one thing that's been missing. I'll let you have the last word here before we kick off.
So I think that's why I believe, even though they're not at the top of these metrics, that 2014 is the team that had the best chance. Because I think that in the last 25 years, that was the best year of quarterback play we've gotten.
Mm-hmm. It would.
Tony Romo was actually at the very height of his powers, and I would put him up against anybody who was playing in that era. I know he doesn't have the arm talent that the guy he lost to that year in Green Bay has, but in terms of processing, in terms of release, in terms of just guts, all that kind of, I think all the things I want in my quarterback he had in spades, other than the fact that, you know, he was nursing a back problem for most of the year. But toward the end of the year, when he started getting a little bit healthier and the passing game started to be a little more explosive, man, that team was good. And they ran into a buzzsaw.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think Romo got at least one MVP vote that season. And that was, of course, everybody talks about the DeMarco 1,800-yard thing. But, you know, that's what you get when you're able to take a little pressure off him and let him, you know, not have to basically put the team on his shoulders mm-hmm. and win games. And it was definitely the most efficient Romo we've seen.
I will say that, you know, DeMarco did that for him for the first half of the season. But the second half of the season, Romo put that team on his shoulders because DeMarco got worn the heck out.
Right.
And so, you know, especially the last month of the season after Thanksgiving, I mean, it was Romo's offense and DeMarco was still productive, but he wasn't the same player he was earlier in the year, and Romo and the passing game were magnificent.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think that's, you know, I mean, I think Romo was, I like Dak a lot as a person. I think Romo was a better quarterback. I think Romo is probably the second best quarterback the Cowboys have ever had, I think. Or third best, I guess. I think there's just so many squandered opportunities with terrible, terrible head coaches during the Romo era that really...
And terrible defenses, too. I mean...
Terrible defenses, yeah. I mean, you know, some of these years, like the ones we're talking about, pretty respectable defenses, but a lot of really, really bad defenses.
Right.
So I think the other thing that we haven't talked about, I don't want to take too long with this, but... You know, the thing that's consistent across all of this is that in many of these instances, the Cowboys were outcoached. I mean, they got outcoached by Mike McCarthy twice. You know, and you get outcoached because your ownership doesn't want coaches that are going to upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean... I know it's a small sample, so the problem with this is it's a small sample and it's so luck driven that there's several of these like could have easily been years where they went to the NFC Championship game if they just had a break, right? But part of it also is you've got to get in the tournament every year. That's the baseline upon which all of this can change. Now they got to get lucky and they got to, you know, stay stronger and more healthy or something.
Yeah.
But the first step is what they're doing now.
I think that. I agree. They need to be lucky. But I will say this: I at least going through this exercise and just, I do think the Cowboys do have a lot of things going for them that they didn't have in those other years. And you talk about being good on both sides of the ball. On you know, that's one of the things. And two, and I do think they've corrected some problems. Whether if you look at improving. Getting stronger in the trenches and with like stopping the run, you know, the Rams ran all over them in 2018. And then, you know, of course they've made changes with their receiving group. So they're helping to help Dak out some more. So I think you could definitely put your finger on a lot of different things that we could sit here a year from now and say, yeah, well, look, you know, they took the appropriate steps because, you know, now, mm-hmm. now they were able to do the things they couldn't do in seasons past, but you know, we won't know until we see it. So it's just, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And speaking of wait and see, you know, you're gonna have to wait and see, you know, what we got going on next week, because that is all the time we have for our show today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging the Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast: Apple, Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like us to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, any hot topics in the Cowboys camp, or who you think the greatest athlete of all time is, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24, and Rab is at RabbleRouser, spelled RabbleRouser. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue, and we will catch you later.
Class dismissed.